Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 264. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It is going good. Feels like we just did this. Back-to-back recording days is always fun. Good to be chatting with you again. Baseball's on the way, man. Just talking with our guests before, some camps are getting rolling, which is exciting. Today, as we were recording, is International Signing Day, the first day of that international signing period. And before we know it, pitchers and catchers will be reporting and spring training will be underway. So spring weather just needs to come back and we will be good, but I'm sure our guest, a special guest, doesn't have to worry about cold weather where he is, but looking forward to this episode. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, our guest, I've recorded podcasts with him at times where he'd log on and say, oh, it was like 114 degrees here today, which is just absolutely insane. I think you all can figure out who we're alluding to here from the sunshiny Arizona. He is one of the staples in this industry, in this league for the longest time now, Prospect One podcast, and now most recently going kind of full-time, doing a lot more with Fantasy Pros. He is The Welsh, at Is It The Welsh on Twitter. How's it going, bud?
Gentlemen.
My besties, what's up, guys? I will say, a little bit colder here. We just had there's the cold snap, apparently, that's like roaming the U.S., and it's in Texas as we're recording this, and it's 17 degrees or something like that there. We were getting like 40, 30s and like 20, 30 nights and stuff like that. But yeah, today it says it's 60 degrees right now at 7 p.m. So we're between 60 and 40. So it's a little bit colder. I've been wearing a lot of hoodies, as I like to wear, but probably not like you guys. There's nothing like the Chiefs and whatever game. There's no negative 30s here.
Yeah, no, thank God we haven't gotten any negative 30s, but it's 24 degrees here right now. It's 9 o'clock at night. We got 5 inches of snow coming tomorrow afternoon. Yeah, it's like Mother Nature's making up for giving us basically zero snow for the most part.
Can't play baseball in that weather. That's the thing. And that's why it's like it's a baseball mecca here. And you guys are mentioning the signing. I was telling you off air. There are camps that literally started today here in Arizona. The Mariners are doing a pitching performance camp that opened up today. And guys are going because you can step outside 50, 60 degrees. These guys are rolling. We barely get rain. It did snow like 2 weeks ago out here in Phoenix, but that's it. It's a rarity. So that's why these guys are going. Padres are getting going. Some major leaguers are here. I've been told Cal Raleigh is out here already training. I think 3 weeks prior to catchers and reporting, or maybe a month prior to catchers and reporters, guys reporting. It's exciting, and that I'm looking forward to poking around. And if you follow any of the player development accounts, you'll also see the Rangers, Royals, these guys are all getting going. So I'm always happy. And I share my baseball mecca with you guys at least once a year when you come out with the first pitch.
No, for sure. Yeah, definitely no baseball being played here right now. I remember back when I was playing varsity ball in high school that the beginning, we'd practice a lot in the gym, but then some of our early practices would be like outside shoveling the field. Literally, we'd be out there, the whole team, JV and varsity, just out there shoveling the field. That was like the first couple weeks of practice. And maybe some random snowball fights would break out between JV and varsity, but that's just how it is. But yeah, no baseball here. But my daughter did mention she wants to get in the softball this year, which I was incredibly excited about. So I'd be able to share my passion with her and, you know, get her training and all that. And so
that's fun, right? My son actually is starting a baseball thing up next week that I'm going to be taking him. And I've actually been taking him. One of those nice things, by the way, about full time in the industry and working from home is you get a little bit of time in between. And I've had like once or twice a week, we go out, we have a field right next to our house, and I've taken him and I've been teaching him about baseball a lot more. And I told him about pull hitting. So anytime he hits one near first, he's like, that was a pull hit. And I'm like, that was, you pulled the ball really well. And we like videotaped it for the first time so he could go back and look at his hits the other day. It's pretty exciting.
Absolutely, awesome, it is.
As a dad.
Yeah, it's definitely a great feeling. So hopefully we'll see if it sticks. I'm going to start working with her and see how she does. We've played off and on here and there. So it's not like she's completely just getting into the game right now, but she hasn't played like on a team yet. So that's fun. Yeah, it's baseball season. It's coming. We got more and more stuff to talk about. Yeah, baseball season is coming. Chris and I are doing 3 episodes a week, which we will be at least for the next few weeks. And then we'll see after that. But 3 episodes this week, next week, and at least the week after that. So a lot of fun stuff. And we're continuing, obviously, our Dynasty and Prospect Ranking Series with outfield prospects today. We're actually going to break up the outfield prospects into 2 episodes. We'll record the other part of it later in the week. So we'll go top 25 today. And we'll start off with our personal ranking as we do every episode here. If you want to kick us off with your top 10 outfield prospects.
All right, top 10 prospect outfield. I have got Wyatt Langford at number 1. Number 2. Jackson Churio, no shockers here. Number 3, Dylan Cruz. Number 4, Jason Dominguez. Number 5, Evan Carter. I feel like that's pretty chalk. And maybe the rest is going to be, it's probably at the bottom end. It's going to get out of chalk here. 6, I've got James Wood. 7, Spencer Jones. That one isn't like everybody else. Pete Crow Armstrong at 8, Chase DeLauder at 9, and Max Clark at 10. You did not hear an outfielder that everyone's going to be, oh my God. How can you not have Walker Jenkins at top 10? He's next. Just wanted to point that out before everybody gets all up in arms.
It's funny that you say that because I tweeted out my top 10 shortstop dynasty ranks earlier today. And then I put a subsequent tweet right after that. So I was like, all right, we've been doing this so long. We know like we put out certain posts or whatever. We'll get questions asked. So for shortstop, I was like, all right, the two questions I know I'm going to be asked are, Mookie Betts would rank 2nd here if I included him, because I know he's eligible in some leagues at shortstop. And then I was like, all right, and CJ Abrams is 11. So I know everyone's like, oh, where's CJ Abrams? So it's funny that you mentioned that.
I had a update on my Patreon in thisleague.com. Like, actually, one is coming this week, but it was like the December, January, whichever one it was. And it was like the first question out was actually about Roman Anthony. Why don't you have Roman Anthony higher? And then the next is like Walker Jenkins. And like I can see it from a mile away. Yep. And really, and I'm not saying they deserve to be high and people have them as high as they want and everything like that. But it's if you are ever not in lockstep with the consensus of the industry, it's a whole thing, and it's fine. I don't care about answering those things, but it's not going to ever like appease everybody, because sometimes it's about sample size. Sometimes it's about full thought on production, but people hear Roman Anthony hits the ball really hard. And it's okay. There's a lot of other guys that hit the ball really hard too. And it's evaluations. I see a lot of players, and sample sizes play a role into it. Analytics play a role into it. All of those things play a role into it. Like, I have a method for it, but yeah, I, from a mile away, know the players. Why do you like this guy so much? And why? And by the way, it's never, how come you're lower on this guy? It's, why do you hate this other guy? So that's what it is. So I don't hate Walker Jenkins at all. I just, like, I know James loves Walker Jenkins. I'm Max Clark over Walker Jenkins is probably going to be my most hot takey thing of, and I'm not trying to take over this conversation however you wanted to take it, but like, I'm probably in the minority of having Max Clark above Walker Jenkins. They're literally next to each other. They 100% are, but you look at what Max Clark did versus what Walker Jenkins did, and I think people are like, how? Walker Jenkins hit 360 and Max Clark hit 224. And so you're talking about like 100 at bat sample sizes that have completely determined everybody's mind of why Max Clark can't be in the same conversation. Yet Max Clark is, I think, a better long-term representation of what we would want in the fantasy realm as far as high end stolen bases with really workable power. Unless you believe Walker Jenkins is going to steal 30 or 40 bases, which I don't. And maybe I'll be proven completely wrong. But it might be the difference between a 30 home run hitter, a 30-15 guy, and a 25-50 guy. And I also think the bat plays across the board with Max Clark. So I made this all about that, but I knew that would come in when you talk about some of these guys. And a couple guys that I have a little bit higher that people would question. But I think the Clark-Jenkins one has become maybe one of the more fascinating, polarizing ranks inside the top 50 for a lot of people right now.
Yeah, and it's funny too, is that I mentioned something somewhere on our last episode, we talking Shortstop Dynasty, where, you know, like, look at Jordan Lawler and Evan Carter and how when they both debuted around close to the same time. And I think I said something like probably 80% of rankings would have Lawler slightly ahead of Carter. But now you look at Dynasty ranks now, after Carter lit the world on fire, had the postseason success, and Lawler didn't do really anything, you know, Carter's jumped way ahead in Dynasty. So yeah, those short sample size reactions, sometimes they're valid, sometimes they're not, but yeah, I totally get what you're coming
fluid.
From there.
It's definitely, it's like a fluid situation. And hot tip if the person that always gets it right and stuff like that. But I think there's so much nuance with so much of it, whether, no matter what you're reading into long-term or short-term, and you just know you're going to miss on some, but I think the prospect ranking has become more, God, what's the word? It moves with the wind more than it's ever done before. A slow breeze can move people in one certain definitive direction more than it's ever gone before. And it's like, this is still a process. So this isn't about Clark and them anymore. It's just about the totality of all of the ranks where everyone is very definitive. These are the guys, these are the only guys. And if this guy was bad here, they're always going to be bad. And it's, how about the number two guy we're talking about here, Jackson Chourio? How about Jackson Chourio year prior to this with the high strikeout numbers? People are like, I don't know. There's some power, there's some speed, but he's striking out. And I think that's something that we should consider. We should be worried about 118 strikeouts. And I guess that was a little over 25%. I don't have the percentage in front of me. Over 25% strikeout rate, 2016. Those are okay numbers, but there's worried there's some swing and miss in his game. And look at this year. It was like sub 21 or under 20% strikeout rate, completely changed. Stolen bases went up through the roof, and that's maturation. And I think I don't have that argument in front of me, but it's just like the same arguments you can make about why Jackson Chourio might have been a fine prospect are now completely turned into why he is an elite Ronald Acuna light type of player. And that's just the element in the movement of prospects and how they go.
Absolutely is. All right, Chris, Clegg, other Chris, what's your top 10?
All right. I've got Langford at one, like everybody else. Chourio at two, like everybody else. Dylan Cruz at three, like everybody else. But then Walker Jenkins at four and Evan Carter at five, followed by Jason Dominguez, that is, James Wood, Roman Anthony, Chase DeLauder, and Pete Crow Armstrong. Round out the top 10.
Petey.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. It's Langford, it's Chourio, it's Cruz. I think that's pretty consensus top three outfield prospects right now, and that's my top three as well. And then I have Evan Carter at 4, Chase DeLauder 5, Jason Dominguez 6, James Wood 7, Walker Jenkins 8, Pete Carroll Armstrong 9, and Roman Anthony 10. I like that we all have Pete Carroll Armstrong in our top 10 because he gets, for guys that are considered like quote unquote top prospects, he gets shit on so much. Like whenever I talk highly of about him or put out like a ranking set and rank him highly, they're like, "Oh, he sucks. He's defense only." I'm like, "No, not really,
Dude, not really." Do you remember? It was the beginning of last year. I got this exact thing where it was like first game. He was like 5 for 5, or first two games he had like 6 hits in his first 10, whatever the hell it was. And then he got hurt and he missed time. And everyone was like, he stinks. He's defense only. There's no power projection. He runs a little bit, but I don't care that he started off the season really hot and spring training was good and blah, blah, blah. And then he comes back as good. And then this past year, he was phenomenal. Big numbers, 20 homers, 37 stolen bases, hit for average, made it to the majors, 14 at bats. What the hell do we care on that? Right. I think that is a funny one. And that is it's a prospect fatigue type of thing. It is. Pete Crow Armstrong is the prototypical prospect that 75% of people will not wait around for to get right. I think Jordan Lawler is actually an example of one of those right now where it's like, everyone's like, we just saw what we saw. So this is not going to be good. They blocked him. They don't want him to play. There's a little bit of swing and miss in his game. I don't know if he's got power. He didn't do anything in the playoffs. Gone. He stinks, and they move on from him. Pete Crow is another one of those guys because there are maybe some long-term power questions that it's there's no benefit of the doubt. And sometimes it works out, the benefit of the doubt. But I think that's always a bad thing. So I'm actually super intrigued that we all had Pete Crow in here. Can I ask also, what is the 10th outfielder's overall rank in all of yours?
Overall is, let me pull that up. So who's my number 10? Roman Anthony, 21.
20. Right?
21 for me too. Yep. I wanted to prove a point here where somebody goes and they're like, this guy's not here, there. We all, our top 10 outfielders are inside the top 21 of our overall ranks. We haven't even gotten out of the 25 going in to the top 10 outfielders. And I'll be, I have two more guys that are inside the top 25. So I have like 12 outfielders that make the top 25. I just thought that might be something critical for people to understand with all those names, that the deviation between all of them is relatively small.
Oh, for sure. Like we were talking about it earlier, Click and I was like, my number 25 guy that we'll get into obviously later in the show is 56 overall. So basically a little under half of my top 50. How many is my top 50? So yeah, I have 22 of my top 50 are outfielders. And I'm sure another 22 of those are probably shortstops as well. But yeah, it's just not a big, a lot of these guys are in the same tier. So you really can deviate any way you want to within that tier. I said that number one tier is the top three that we mentioned. The number two tier is pretty damn big. Like, where would you say your number two tier for this position? And obviously, let's call Langford, Churio, Cruz tier one. You know, where is your tier two, Anna? You start with Jason and ends where for you?
For me personally, it's the next three. I know what you're getting at because I'll expand it. My tier two is pretty affirmative. Dominguez, Carter, and James Wood. And then it ends. I would actually even be open to saying just Jason Dominguez and Carter. But my next tier is the proverbial glob. It's the glob everyone talks about with pitching. I think we really open it up to a lot of players. And that's why I let myself get caught into the weeds. But I don't let people get me caught into the weeds where someone wants to be like, where's Roman? Where's Walker? Why do you like Drew? I think the switch between outfielder 7 and I would go as far to say 17 is really close. So if somebody wants to have a guy higher over here, that's fine. That's totally fine. I think that's how close that grouping is. So it's my tier 3 that is giant.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of definitely what I was alluding to is that at some point, there's like a massive glob where you could have a 10-spot gap in these rankings, but it's only like 18 spots in your overall because these guys are all pretty close. And yeah, for me, like Walker Jenkins, my number 8, he's at, Jenkins, I have at 15 overall. And then, I have Drew Gilbert at 33 overall. Again, he's 9 spots down in my outfield rankings. So yeah, it's not that big of a gap there. And people like to think it is, like, oh, you have him 9 spots down in your outfield rankings. But you look at the overall and he's pretty damn close and maybe even in the same tier a lot of times. But let's go up to the top though with Wyatt Langford As we did this last episode with Jackson Holliday, looking at what his peak outcome might look like. So let's do that same thing with Langford, because I think that's even higher than what we could see with Holliday. And I have Holliday, Langford number one overall in my rankings. I made that switch, I think, in like August or so, because I'm so freaking enamored with Langford's all-around profile. Like, obviously, the contact skills are pretty damn good. Big power, good speed as well. Like the approach, he had 200 WRC plus this year, or 202, I think it was, in 200 plate appearances. Like, absolute potential stud, good ballpark, good lineup. Everything's there that you want for a potential fantasy stud. And you know, I've seen him go as high as like top 20 already in like dynasty mock drafts. So, Welsh, what are you thinking? What we're looking at here? Let's go like 4 or 5 years down the road once he's settled in as a major leaguer. You thinking 30-30 guy? What do you think the peak Langford looks like?
I think peak Langford is like,
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
28 to 30 homers, 20 stolen bases with a really good average. I think that's going to stick up. I think they'll be. And when I say really good average, like I still think you can hit 270, and that can be like a really good spot categorically. So I'm not saying he has to be a 300. I see shades of, there's like a Mike Troutness in him. I would totally acknowledge that. Like, he's got like a bulkier body like Mike Trout. It was really interesting. I was at Langford's major league debut because he came over here to Complex and played like 3 games, and I went to 2 of them. And it's physically imposing while also not being super tall, but he doesn't have the vibes when you look at him as this player where you're like, holy God, this is a freak of an athlete. No, he's just like, he's a big stocky guy that hits the ball really hard. Sometimes even out here, he would hit it into the ground. Once he got comfortable, he started putting it in the air. Maybe I'm being pessimistic, but I'm going to say 280, and let's just go 30-20, and he's a middle-of-the-order guy, and that is a top 15 to 20 overall player in fantasy in 4 years. And is there a higher ceiling? Totally. The higher ceiling could be him being like a 40-30. It could be like old-school Mike Trout. I'm just not sure if we're quite there. And as cool as everything is, I just don't know if what we saw in this short sample size is like, oh yeah, he's the most elite of elite prospects that we've ever seen. I'm not a Wyatt Langford one overall. I'm Jackson Holliday at one overall. And I'm in a small camp. I don't know who's all in that same boat with me. I've Langford at 2. I absolutely love him, but I don't know if it's like we are in full anointment that this is the most elite prospect that we've ever seen ever. But yeah, long way to say 30, 20, 280, 9,500, whatever. That's a great freaking fantasy player.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I was thinking like closer to 35, but yeah, pretty much everything else was in line with what you were saying. And yeah, it's great right now because there's not like that definitive number one. I think if you polled 100 people, it probably the most popular answer would probably be Langford at this point. I don't know. But Langford, Holliday, obviously, great case for number one. Junior Caminero, Jackson Churio, you could really go like one of 4 ways, really.
He was the number one in my P180Ps. And thank you both for taking part in that. I create a prospect ADP. Clegg does a dynasty version. Mine is strictly prospects I've been doing for like 3 years. And Langford was, I think he was in 3 of the 4 drafts, he was number one. But there were different combinations. Like I think Caminero went like 2 in one of them. I actually have to, let me look real quick. Let me pull it up here because now I'm talking myself out that maybe Caminero went in 1. I'll pull it up here in just a second. But the point was to say that Langford was the number one unanimous across the leagues that we drafted.
Gotcha. Chris, what are your thoughts on peak Langford?
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat. Love the profile. I think there's speed that's going to stick for a good bit of his career. I think that 20-25 stolen bases is realistic. 25-30 home runs regularly. 280, 400 OBP. Like, he's going to play. That kind of skill set's going to be monstrous. He's going to be an elite lineup for a long time. So, yeah, I don't have much to add on Langford there. He's a top-tier prospect, whether you have him one overall or not. I think everybody would agree that he is a top-tier, the top-tier of prospects. Like I said, you can go several ways. And for me, like, he certainly fits out Caminero number one, but Langford still is in that first tier. Highly impressive. I think we see him up pretty quickly, and I think he's going to have a solid year this year. Maybe not to the levels that we're talking about, like peak, but I still think Langford has a high floor to hit and most likely will contribute pretty solid numbers this year in 2024.
What's really interesting is NFBC drafts. I've done two DCs now, and Chirio goes ahead of Langford. And I think the only reason behind that is because the Rangers have not given like more of a confirmation like you have with Chirio. And I think he would. I think he would go quite a bit higher. I have him ranked higher. I think he'd go quite a bit higher. I actually think he's safer and less volatile from a this year standpoint. But how fascinating is it that we all have different number ones overall? And circling back, only one league he didn't go number one. In that league that we drafted here, he actually went third. So that was a weird one. Holiday was the other number one. Caminero went two above Langford in the league where he fell. So just an interesting little note to add.
Yeah, and even I was looking at Steamer projections for Langford this year. They have him at 381 plate appearances, but still going 15-9. So I'm extrapolating that up to 650 plate appearances. That would be, 26 home runs and 15 steals. So they haven't gone like 25-15 over a 650 plate appearance pace, which I think is definitely possible. I think he'll be up earlier than that. Yeah, I've been drafting them all my redrafts so far. Always,
I don't do a lot of future bets and stuff like that. Last year paid me really well with Carroll, but I did put a little bet on Langford already on FanDuel. It's already up. I put
AL Rookie of the Year.
AL Rookie of the Year. I think it's like plus 800, and it's interesting because Carter is, I think, the perceived number one, and they will compete against each other a little bit, but I moved away from that. And then my AL bet so far was Langford. Actually, my NL bet was Chirio. I did a very early bet on both of them.
Nice. Yep. That's two pretty good bets to make. And speaking of Chirio, let's go over to him and sit somewhere thought process here. What are you thinking for long-term for Chirio, even short-term? What are you expecting from him this year? Obviously, after signing the contract extension a month or so ago, going to be in the opening day lineup and should get a lot of plate appearances this year. So what are you expecting from him this year? And what is the same question as Langford? What are you thinking peak Chirio looks like?
I'm a little tiny, itty-bitty pessimistic about this year. I'm not a big, I don't invest crazy in rookies in like redraft formats and stuff like that. And I don't know, like he made huge adjustments. What I was talking about before in 2022, 28% strikeout rate in the predominant amount of games he played in A ball. And then high A was about 22%. And then he went to double A and he had like 42%. So huge strikeout issues. This past year in double A, 18% strikeout rate. So he significantly decreased it, which is fantastic. And then he played a couple games in AAA, which he wasn't striking out, while maybe improving his walk rate. I'm a little bit worried that he's going to get a little swing happy and maybe there's some strikeout issues. I think he does have that Acuna light feel, like really dynamic stolen bases, absolutely can explode on pitches. But I wouldn't be shocked. Would you think if he did what Ellie De La Cruz did, would you consider that a massive failure, like 15 homers, 30 stolen bases with like a 230 average? I'm not saying that's going to happen, but like, would you consider that a failure for Chirio, you think?
I mean, I wouldn't, but Twitter absolutely would.
Yeah, the consensus absolutely will, which if a prospect doesn't come up and they're not Ronald Acuna right off the bat, then they're a fail for most people. Why do we pay this? Why do we extend this guy for 8 years? That's crazy to even think about, in my opinion, that we would consider that kind of season a failure, but the expectations are just way too high on every prospect at the end of the day. Chirio's Is he even turned 20 yet? I know he'll be 20 to start the season, but I don't think he's still 19. Can you imagine what you were doing at 19? Not playing in the major leagues. I can tell you that.
Not being successful.
Yeah. That's a hard task to step into. You're coming off a big contract. Like, you have expectations. Not an easy spot to fill. And while I think that Trujillo can handle it, he's going to show some power. He's going to show some speed. Like, he's going to be able to handle all the off-speed stuff. So if he gives you 15 home runs and steals 25-plus bags in 2024, I'd be really happy. Depending on where the average lands, as long as he's not, like, below the Mendoza line. But I think that people expect him to come up and hit 270 and be, like, 25-25 right off the bat.
Well, Corbin Carroll ruined it. Like, Corbin Carroll, Gunner, and I won't be the complete homer, but, like, Gunner and Carroll ruined, like, the expectations. Because if Langford is a, just argue here, 450, 500 bats, 20 homers, 15 stolen bases, hits 290 with good run and RBI, everyone will be like, that's cool. If Churio hits 245 with 15 homers and 30 stolen bases, people will be like, that's all right. But the expectation is what we saw with a guy like Corbin Carroll and Gunnar Henderson, who blew the top off. Or what if Churio struggles to start and then it's built off of the second half? Like, I just think there's variables when you're talking about this first year. The long-term expectation, Churio has already shown the exact signs that you want. This is a guy that was able to cut his strikeout percentage, make better decisions, has elite bat speed, ran even more aggressively, and the team made that commitment when they don't like to make commitments. Ask Corbin Burns. Like, I think everything, Churio is doing the steps in the prospect side of all of this, you know, the metric that you want. So I have high expectations of him. I rank him incredibly high in Dynasty, as he should. Top 25 guy. Like, yeah. I think we can get to that 25, 30. I think, like, it would be crazy to not think he can be a 30-30 guy. He could be Bobby Witt. He could be Julio Rodriguez. I think that is absolutely in the realm of possibility when it happens. I'm not sure. If he struggles, I'm going to buy. But I think, like, Langford can be the floor play year one. Churio can be the upside play. But they might miss in points where people are like, these guys just didn't quite pan out. And that would be where I would be jumping on buying that prospect fatigue that people have. And it's so quick and easy because there's also such a big sector of the prospect side that is moved from, hey, who are cool guys to invest in long-term and blah, 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 to, oh, you have to buy and sell prospects on the tip. You have to sell at the top, buy at the bottom, and it's stock. And it's not saying that there aren't great applications for that and understanding it, but that is the mentality of a lot of the things. So prospect fatigue is so much quicker. This guy's not doing anything for me right now. He has a bad strikeout rate. He stinks. I have to get rid of him. And oh my God, I screwed up. And like that mentality, I think, is rough. Guys like me, it's rough because I'm stubborn. I'm a lot more stubborn because I get focused on the big picture and I rank more in a big window and picture than I do off of like proximity in just this year. And that's where you get like volatility in ranks and stuff. Sorry, I'm literally not shutting the hell up in this episode.
No, all good, man. But I was just looking at Churio's steamer projections. So those are actually pretty legit. Maybe a few more steals, but they have him at 253, 305, 416. This is them 524 plate appearances, 17 home runs, 16 steals. I think that's pretty fair. Maybe I said maybe add another handful of steals in there, but yeah, I think 250-ish first year, lower OBP, has ever been a big walk rate guy, but yeah, could go after 15 plus, 20 plus right away. And they're going to give him that extension for a reason. They're giving him that chance to play right away. And so there's a lot in the way that lineup is not great overall, 1 through 9. So plenty of opportunity to play a ton there, even through the struggles he'll probably have at some point this year. But yeah, it's like, back to the Ellie thing real quick. It's people are so quick to say, oh, Ellie's a bust, or he's not as good as everyone thought. And the dude was literally, while working through crap as a rookie, on a 20.53 pace. What else would you want? Obviously you want him to make more contact, cut the K rate. Yeah, he's got to get the work on, but still on 20.53 pace as a rookie. So this is insane when people just nitpick so hardcore right off the bat. Like, these are rookies. They're working through the stuff that every rookie has to work through. And I'm sure Churio will go through some of the same stuff. And if people want to sell or buy low, I think it's going to be a good time. When he goes to that first struggle, which will happen at some point this year, yeah, that's probably a good time to buy low as people probably perceive value will dip a little bit there. But speaking of dipped perceived value, that was a weird way to transition over to this, these next two guys, but it works, whatever. Dylan Cruz, James Wood. You know, I think the two elite outfield prospects that I've seen there, Wood over the full season because he's having some strikeout issues, and Cruz just didn't perform like Langford did, and that's really the big thing there. So I think the perceived value on these guys has dipped. Wood since the start of last season and Cruz since the draft. Clegg, I'll go over to you first on these guys. First off, has your long-term expectations and your thought process behind ranking these guys changed over the last 6 months to a year, whatever it may be? And would you be willing to buy low on them in Dynasty right now?
Yeah, it's crazy to even consider talking about buying low on Dylan Cruz, but that's where we are at this point.
Right.
And it's nothing that he did. It was everything that Wyatt Langford did, in my opinion, and the expectation that was on Cruz. Now, with Wood, I think that the values dip for a decent reason. I think there's questions about where the hit tool lands, and I understand that completely. With Wood, he's a massive guy, 6'7". He's got long levers. There's going to be swing and miss. He struck out pretty high clips, had a 68% contact rate last year, really struggles with breaking balls. He mashes fastballs, but the breaking balls are a struggle. But the tools are really good. He has probably 70 grade power, had a 109 mile an hour ninth percentile, which is really high end. There's no denying that. He moves really well for his size. The struggles, as I mentioned, against fastball or against breaking balls and changeups, he swung at 50% of those pitches and made contact just 51% of the time. So you have to wonder if he's just going to start getting more and more breaking balls to the point that it hurts him. He's going to face better pitching as he moves up. Hopefully he's working on picking up spin better this offseason. So we'll see how that goes. But that's a major red flag. Good athlete. He's going to steal bases, got power. And there's endless upside here. But I do think he's got to show improvement, which I think his value's down enough where you could buy low. With Cruz, it's just bizarre to me that people look at a small double-A sample and, oh my gosh, he was so bad. And don't give a rip about what he did the rest of his pro debut, which was really good. So here's the thing with Dylan Cruz. He knows the strike zone better than umpires do. Like, the dude's strike zone awareness is elite. He was getting rung up on plenty of pitches called strikes that weren't in the strike zone. And it showed in the strikeout rate. Like, oh, he struck out 27% of the time in single A. But again, if you look at the underlying data, it's still really good. Still makes contact at high-end rates. He was rung up on called strikes that were just not strikes. And then double A, he's in one of the most pitcher-friendly parks in all the minor leagues, and he runs a really low BABIP. He had 278 BABIP, which isn't extremely low. You look, and he had a 436 BABIP in single A. He's not going to run either of those rates long-term. So with Cruz, everything's still there. The talent's there. He makes high-end contact. He hits the ball incredibly hard. He's a really good athlete. So I'm still banking on that. You're not going to get as much speed out of Cruz. I don't think he's going to be a huge stolen base threat, but he's going to be high OBP, really solid average, and good power. So, yeah, if for some reason people are down on Dylan Cruz, you should absolutely buy.
Yeah, I had Cruz start of FYPD ranking season last, almost a year ago now, probably 10, 11 months ago. I did have Cruz one, and obviously I'm Langford now, but that literally has nothing to do with what Cruz did. 100% to do with my thought process, me liking Langford even more after seeing him more and what he did in the minor leagues. Literally nothing to do with Cruz. Like, I don't care that he struggled at double A. Don't care whatsoever. I still think the exact same long term about him as I did back in May or June of this past year. Like, I still think he's going to be early round top 30 overall player. Upside is there, 30 home runs, 15 plus steals. Good average, good OBP. And with Wood, he has dropped a little bit in my rankings. He's still like a top 10 caliber guy for me. Like, obviously, maybe the average won't be super high because, you know, longer levers lead to a higher K rate. That's normal for these bigger guys. So maybe he's more like a 250, 260 hitter, but that's 30 plus home runs and double digit steals as well. Like, that's still a potential top 50 player right there. So, yeah, I'm still, you know, pretty high on both of them. Have scaled back a little bit on James Wood, but still pretty high. What are your thoughts on this duo here?
Yeah, I'll try to make it quick. Like, I'm full in on Dylan Cruz. You said it really well. Like, for me, moving Langford above Cruz was more about what Langford was doing than it was about Cruz.
Yeah.
I believe Cruz is going to zip. I hope it's going to zip a lot of people up. I think hard hit numbers across the field. I've cited these a lot, but like, he put up some really good hard hit numbers hitting opposite field. I think you're going to have above average max EVs that are going to come out of him. I was thinking about both of these players. Langford has a Goldschmidt-ness in him, even like in the swing and the approach, which I think can get into doubles and stuff like that. There's something in my mind about Cruz in the way that he makes contact and how hard he hits the ball. I personally would not be shocked if we saw bigger homer numbers from Cruz than Langford. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I just wouldn't be shocked if it does. And I think Langford is coming up before James Wood. I have a weird history with James Wood. Like, I've seen him a gajillion times out here when he was a Padre. Always stinks whenever I see him. The breaking pitches have always been a problem. I've seen 17-year-old, like, just stateside Dominican pitchers throw just gross breaking pitches, and James Wood just swing through them. Like, he absolutely destroys fastballs. He's a freak of a talent. So I'm cool to make bets on freaks of talent like that. But like, Dylan Cruz is my guy. I think that is going to be a higher elite level player that I think could steal a few more bases than people expect. I think can hit 30 homers, can hit for a good average. And I think there's just too little of sample size to be like, oh, this is like what the hard hit. And just let me get a full season. Let me get like a real season, a real off season out of Dylan Cruz. He didn't get drafted, decided to go to LSU and became the number one player literally from the jump as a freshman at LSU. And I think there's a fatigue to how good he was. It's actually similar to the conversation around one of the picks that just signed internationally here in, I think it's Jose Perdomo. Jose Perdomo had a similar thing where, like,
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Over the last year, and Alex Jensen did a really good job talking about this on James Anderson's podcast, but like, where Perdomo had just hit the ceiling of offensive production, of who he was, the hit tool and everything like that, that he just kept meeting expectations for the next year. So people stopped getting excited about him. And I think that's how kind of Cruz ended up going for some time, where it's just like, he's just consistently good. And then I think you take that for granted. And I'm a big Dylan Cruz. I'm buying Dylan Cruz anywhere I can.
Yep, absolutely agree there. All right, next guy here, Chase DeLauder, who everyone that follows my work in this podcast now, I've loved Chase DeLauder. I have him inside my top 10 overall, not just at this position. I have him number 9 overall in my rankings, and I'm pretty sure you won't find many other places that have him top 10 overall. But so I think everyone knows my answer to this question of, is he a stud? Can he be a stud? I think yes. Everyone, oh, the swing's funky. I don't care. I'm one of those guys where, like, there's not one way to hit a baseball. Every swing is a bit different. And especially when his funkiness is more so like after he's made contact on the follow through, I don't care if what he's doing after the follow through, to be honest with you, because he makes good contact. He makes both in terms of quantity of contact and quality of contact. He's got that power. He's got solid speed as well. He's a bigger guy, but a good athlete. I think there's a lot of similarities to Langford, just scaled back a little bit. Not quite the same upside as Langford's, but I think the latter could be a stud and guy that's up first half of this year. But you have him the lowest of the three of us, I believe. Yes, I have him
really?
5. Yeah, I have him 5 here. Oh no, you and Clegg both have him at 9. Okay, I thought you had him a spot or two below that. But what are your thoughts on the louder long term? What type of player do you think he's going to be?
Oh yeah, you guys know I couldn't shut up about him. The first week being out here in the AFL, I was like, this is the best, most major league player that is playing here in the AFL. I absolutely fell in love with him. It's a pro body. The guy who's aggressive on the base paths out here can run. And I don't care about the swing. I'd go back to Paul Goldschmidt. People get really focused on funky swings and stuff like that. Great players find great ways to optimize whatever it is that differs in them. Paul Goldschmidt had the same thing with kind of this like high kind of free swing. And DeLauder doesn't have a follow through, but he still gets into the power. And that's the key. He still puts up big AVs. He still crushes baseballs. He does not swing at something outside the zone. Like he finds his pitch. I was so fascinated. I saw so many at bats during the AFL of his, and he was selective, not in a bad selective. So Edward Julian had a bad selectiveness to right. him where he wouldn't swing. And then all of a sudden in two strike counts, he becomes the most aggressive hitter on the planet. And it's like, dude, you just got yourself into these spots. And then all of a sudden you're just good and free swinging. That's not DeLauter. DeLauter makes contact, big 6 foot four frame. There's nothing to not like about outside of picking on that swing, which I just don't think is going to be a problem. It allows him to cheat a little bit while still maximizing the power. So he's not eating into pitches. He can see the ball travel a little bit. That I'm very aggressive on him. And I would have been shocked if I was the lowest here. I know we all liked him, but I loved watching him in the AFL. And yeah, I still stand to it. I think we might look back and he might be one or two best players from the AFL this past year. And he suffered some injuries and he missed time, and that's why he was there in the AFL. I wouldn't be shocked to see him this year, even mid-year with the Guardians.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's been a popular DC target of mine, popular best ball target, just to get him in the, I don't remember where he's going. I think he was going like 450, 500 range, I feel. And I'm like, I'm fine taking him back there around 30 or whatever. So I think you get more than half a season out of him this year. But Clegg, what are your thoughts on DeLauter?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Don't give a rip about the swing because it's not a swing issue. It's a follow-through issue, which who cares about ultimately, because the EVs are still plus at least and made contact 86% of the time last year. Not an issue at all. Doesn't chase pitches out of the zone. Very good strike zone recognition. So yeah, I'm all in on DeLauter. I think he honestly might be plus hit power and speed, which is a rare combo. So I think he's a great player to invest in. And so if people are worried about the swing, I would just say, don't be. And trust that he's a good enough player to make it work.
Absolutely. All right. Next one, we got a little debate here, a little mano-a-mano or player versus player, so to speak, with Walker Jenkins, Roman Anthony, and Emmanuel Rodriguez. Clegg, I'll throw it over to you first here. How do you break down these three? Because I think these three guys I've seen ranked all three ways. Some people are higher on Erod, some higher on Anthony, some higher on Jenkins. Obviously, Jenkins is the more recent trendy name, which is funny to say because Anthony also broke out this year, but Jenkins did so more so second half of the year. So he's the more recent trendy name out of the three of these guys, but all three obviously high upside and different profiles too. It's like they're the same type of guy. I think they have a lot of differences in there, but some similarities. But how do you break down these three, and then who would you rather hit your wagon to, so to speak, long term?
I'm most comfortable with Anthony, somebody that I've seen by far the most. These guys actually haven't seen Emmanuel Rodriguez or Walker Jenkins live at this point, but Anthony, obviously local here in Greenville for a good portion of the year, most comfortable with who he is as a player. I have Walker Jenkins the highest, similar tier. Like all these guys are in a similar tier, but I do have Jenkins as a top 10 overall prospect just from the perspective of who he is as a player. I do believe that Jenkins has a plus field hit. His contact skills were really good in a small sample this year. He's got a big projectable frame with a lot of power upside there. And he's actually seen his run times tick up. Like, he's a big frame, but he runs really well. And the numbers, while a small sample, had a 90% zone contact and 82% overall contact rate, which is really good from a pretty big power bat too. And while he didn't show big time power, the EVs still solid overall. And I think he's a 30 home run bat that can steal you 10 bases. And his contact skills, I just believe, are a little bit better than Roman Anthony's. Probably have similar power outputs. Wouldn't be surprised if they had similar EVs. And ultimately with Emmanuel Rodriguez, while he may have the most upside of any of these guys, it's just he's also passive to a fault. And he does not swing at all early in counts. And it bites him in the butt when he gets a breaking ball with two strikes and he just can't do anything with it. So that's my biggest concern with Erod is I'd love to see him just attack early in counts. And that's what he needs to do at the end of the day. So I think Anthony probably is the safer profile here. And even it's crazy, but Jenkins has a pretty safe profile himself, even though he's younger and he has such a small sample. But I'd really just believe that Jenkins is plus contact, plus power, and honestly, I think he's a plus runner. His clock times are plus runner right now. Will he steal that many bases long term? I don't know, but that's what he is right now. So I just really believe in Jenkins' bat and ability to be a solid fantasy asset.
Welsh, how about you?
Yeah, this is a pretty clear Jenkins to me, even though I'm whenever it sounded negative earlier. Like, I agree. Jenkins has shown a good ability for both righties and lefties. Good hard hit, physically impressive. Running a little bit, I don't believe the stolen bases, like I mentioned, are going to continuously translate over. But there's still an advance. There's an advanced hit tool with big power. I think with Roman Anthony that is popped up, that was like the one that popped up in my ranks. I think there is a ton to be excited about, but there are some warts. He good, low K rate at A ball, big hard hit numbers. If you look at the hard hit strength, according to RotoWire, bad was shorter sample size, but hit like 150 against lefties. And I think it was A ball, 30% K rate as well. The stolen bases, I'm not sure where you buy it. I also had noted this, 12 of his 14 homers came from high A in 54 games, and then he had only two more homers in 52 games spread out across two other levels. So, like, all I'm getting at is, like, I just have some questions about Roman Anthony. So he gets treated in my mentions like he is the most elite of elite prospect, and I think he does tons of stuff right. There's a few warts. Small sample size, I don't really see any a lot of the warts with Jenkins, and you guys said it right with him. I think you guys nailed the analysis across the board, and I would trust Clegg, especially because I know Clegg has seen Roman Anthony a lot, and I'm not trying to pick him apart, but to me, this tier is like Jenkins, and then it's the next tier of Anthony and Rodriguez. And the reason we get excited about Rodriguez is he puts up like absurd hard hit numbers, and you could dream that, oh, this is a guy that's been injured, has not made the next big aggressive step to tap into his tools. And if he were, he actually might be the most electric of any of these guys.
Right.
But I think the safest bet is Walker Jenkins across the board. Roman Anthony is positioning himself to be like a really good prospect, and Manuel Rodriguez has the most volatility of all of them. So Jenkins is in a tier in my mind outside of these two.
Yeah, yeah, I was speaking to Anthony's power. I think that partially the K rate in single A was a lot of called third strikes. Like, his contact rates are really good. He chased 18% of pitches out of the zone, and it was even lower in single A. So, like, he was getting rung up because he wasn't swinging at all, bad pitches to hit. He actually went oppo a lot. I saw a 440-foot home run in Greenville, 112 off the bat, had a 106 ninth percentile, which is solid. So I think the power's there with Anthony. I do believe in it. So the home runs, it was a weird split in single A, double A, and all of them were in high A. But I do believe that there's, you know, at least 25 home run, if not more pop. Yeah,
and I think,
I'm with you on the stolen bases. I don't know how much he steals long term, so I think that's still a question to be answered.
Yeah, and I would just also point out, like, I if I was making it like, oh, Roman Anthony doesn't have real power, that's not the thing.
No.
It might be more about the decision making and where does the next level of decision making going, because he struggled against lefties, and great, you have opposite power, but we've got to get through that. And what level will that happen? Sometimes it takes years and years. So my only argument has been the difference between treating him elite and treating him like this is a great prospect to be invested in. That's how I treat it, because there are some, like I said, there are some warts. There's a weird homer split. There's bad against lefties. Stolen bases don't seem real, but there's lots of other cool stuff that's about him. So that's what's tough about doing this, is we have to talk negatively when defending something else, but it's not meant to be. And it's if I, me having Roman Anthony like in the top 35 people, it's they're like, oh my God, what's wrong with you?
why do you hate Roman Anthony?
Yeah, I got a second head on my shoulder. It's like, oh, there's some questions. Lots of guys have questions, but that is also why I can appreciate listening to Clegg be able to break down where he's seen a whole lot of it. But you're also acknowledging like where we're not picking apart some prospects we talk about. We don't have a ton to pick apart. There are some things to pick apart with Roman Anthony. It doesn't mean he won't get through it. That's where you say, and that's what's cool about him and some of these prospects as well. Like, I'm down with guys like him that show so many positive traits where it's like, oh, if we could just click this on and click this on, we're talking about elite. That's why I do think it is worth valuing him in an elite level, because he's a click or two away. Emmanuel Rodriguez, unfortunately, isn't a click or two away. He's multiple. We have multiple things we need to start working in play for him to become elite, so that you might even be tiered in three spots in my mind. It might be like, here's Walker Jenkins, here's the Roman Anthony tier, and then here's Emmanuel Rodriguez tier.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And I think for me, yeah, Erod, he's probably the one you can get the cheapest right now. So if you're looking to go out and acquire one of these guys, I think the price tag on him is a bit lower than Anthony and Jenkins. But for me, I think the floors between Jenkins and Anthony, I think, are pretty similar. And I just think that Jenkins has that level of upside that's just slightly higher than Anthony's. I think Jenkins has, he might be in the running for number one overall fantasy prospect next year.
I think he's the most unobtainable prospect besides the top four. I think, and you're making like, hey, maybe I don't think you can acquire him. And if you do, you're going to give up the farm. I think he's the most, you look through that list that doesn't include the top four. I couldn't name you one guy who would be tougher to get than Walker Jenkins.
Yeah.
Not Dylan Cruz, not Dominguez, not Evan Carter, nobody. I think he is the tippy top of that. So if you're someone that is a little bit of a questioner or you like to sell your stocks, I think he is at the tippy top of value. Not to say he won't overpass it, but I think he's the toughest prospect to get.
Yeah, no, his value is absolutely skyrocketed, obviously, and he was dominant in those 26, 27 games, whatever it was, after the draft. And yeah, I think he's one of the guys, and he was already obviously a high draft pick or a high FYPD guy, I should say, in rankings, but he elevated the stock even more to the point where, Clegg, you have him top 10. Like, this is a guy that, or no, so who had him top 10 between the two of you?
Not me.
I'm top 10 overall. I've got him six, so.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Someone said he was top 10 overall. Yeah, and he's not that far outside of it for me as well. So, yeah, guy that literally could be number one overall fantasy prospect this time next year, and I don't think that would really shock anybody. But, all right, let's move on to our next set of rankings here. We've talked about the top 10 enough here. We'll go 11 through 25 and talk about a few guys to round out the show. Welsh, who's your 11 through 25?
Oh, I just had to click a little tier thing here. I have got Walker Jenkins, who we mentioned, at 11. Roman Anthony at 12. Heston Kerstad. Oh, I'm sorry. How far are we going? Are we going to 25 all the way?
25, yeah.
Okay. Roman Anthony's at 12. Kerstad is at 13. Kevin Alcantara, 14. Drew Gilbert at 15. Manuel Rodriguez, Lazaro Montes, Gabriel Gonzalez, Osue De La Pala at 20. I've got Rafaela, Drew Jones at 21, Yankiel Fernandez at 22, Jonathan Classe at 23, Jacob Marcy at 24, and Victor Scott at 25.
Clegg, how about you?
All right, so starting at 11 with Emmanuel Rodriguez, who we just talked about, followed by Max Clark, Heston Kerstad, Owen Casey, Colton Kowser, round out 15, and then 16 through 20, Spencer Jones, Jacob Melton, Drew Jones, Drew Gilbert, and Lazaro Montes at 20. And then 21 through 25 is Victor Scott second, Bryce Eldridge, Everson Pereira, Kevin Alcantara, and Sidon Rafaela.
All right. For me, I got 11 through 15, Max Clark, Emmanuel Rodriguez, Lazaro Montes, Colton Kowser, Drew Gilbert, 16 through 20, Joey Labrafito, Spencer Jones, Owen Casey, Sidon Rafaela, Victor Scott II, and 21 through 25, a couple of Cincinnati guys in here, Hector Rodriguez, Blake Dunn, and then Heston Kerstad, Jonathan Classe, and Kevin Alcantara rounding out my top 25 there. I'll start with Colton Kowser for this group of players here, another guy that it was a little bit of a bigger sample size, but still not a big sample size in general. He's a guy that I've seen, like, people are mostly down on Colton Kowser because he came up and had, 61 plate appearances, or 61 at bat, 77 plate appearances for Baltimore, and just looked terrible. You know, there's no way around it. Didn't like strike out a ton, but 115, 286, 148 slash line, had two doubles in 26 games. That's it. No home runs, stole a bag, did walk 13 times. I guess that's the one bright spot there was the walker. It was still pretty solid, but Welsh, are you still, as your long-term thought process on Kowser change? Like, is he a guy you'd look to buy low right now, or do you think, maybe this guy wasn't as good as we thought?
Yeah, this is one I went pretty hard in the Colton Kowser business, and this it feels wrong at the end of the day. And this is me, the guy that's like, hey, I don't want to give up on guys quite yet, and we should really give them time to fall through and mature and stuff like that. And he showed signs to me that I think are classic rookie signs. One is looking at barrel percentage, 2.5 barrel percentage in his debut. Not uncommon. Launch angle, four degrees, not uncommon. Ellie had the same thing. Ellie had, like, I think, a not great barrel percentage and a poorish launch angle. And that's him learning to get the ball in. But the things you worry about is expected numbers are bad. He struggled against every single pitch type. Fastballs, he was the worst against, which I really hate to see. The strikeouts were enormous. Average exit velocity was garbage. he just wasn't barreling anything whatsoever. And really, I guess if you look at from accounting stats and you focus more on fantasy, even the minor league numbers weren't like jumping off the page or anything like that. So I'm not out or anything. I tend to be the least out of anybody on prospects overall. So I could be down, especially as a throw-in guy, but he didn't make my top 25. He's out of it. I just don't know if he can ever be more than a 20 homer, 10 stolen base guy. And that's what I sit with. And I'm not trying to down talk 2010. That's great. But I think that might be the peak. And I'm not sure that's something like I want to make the heavy investment in if I think the peak value I could get out of him is like 280, 20, and 10. And I don't think he hits in the top three of an order. So, yeah, I'm just...
It's Clegg, how about you? Are you looking to buy low on Couser right now?
Maybe. It depends on the cost. I think he's fine. The contact skills are... that's the concern. Like, how much contact does he make? Is there potential to be like a 2020 type player? I believe so. Maybe the stolen bases don't quite get there. Maybe he's closer to like 15 stolen base type at peak with 20 home runs. But where's the average land? And how often does he steal? I think those questions still remain. I do believe he's a 20 home run bat and has that potential. But at the end of the day, like, it all depends on the acquisition cost. So I'm not fully in on Couser, but I'll take him on in a deal if it was the right cost.
Yeah, I think it is the right cost right now. Like I said, I think the perceived value has dipped to a point where I think he is a solid buy, but at the same time, I have adjusted my expectations for him long term. I'm not as high on him, what Walsh was saying. I'm not really as high on him, you know, now as I was 12 months ago. But can he still be like a solid outfield four type or something like that? Sure. I think you're not never going to stand out in any one area, but he could do a little bit of everything across the board, and always been a guy that's pretty good OBP. He's always had a pretty high walk rate throughout his minor league career. So he's a guy that can give you know, a little bit of everything without hurting you. We'll see where the context skills.
I wouldn't be shocked if he's a late bloomer. That's the other thing too.
Sure.
But that's why even now buying low might not even work. Is he going to get the opportunity this year? Is that even going to happen at this point where they don't push other guys off? But I could see him making it click at some point. I just don't know if it's going to be this year.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. But next guy on the list here, Victor Scott, who had a phenomenal year this past year and really starting to gain steam in a lot of prospect rankings now. And we all have him top 25 here, so he's all in our top 50 or right around that range. Last year, 303, 369, 425, 39 extra base hits. 9 of those were home runs. And just throwing 94 steals, nothing much there. If you combine the minor leagues and the Arizona Fall League, which were 155 games played total, he had 112 steals. Only caught 17 times. Just phenomenal stuff there. He had 18 steals in 23 games, which to take that with a grain of salt, because there wasn't a lot of good defensive catchers out there with good arms. So everyone was running wild. I could have probably had the 10 steals out in the Arizona Fall League, but... Yeah, this is a guy that everyone is easy to go, oh, look at Estuary Ruiz now. Like, Clegg and I have talked about this before, so I'll get your opinion here. This is a better bat than Estuary Ruiz. Maybe some more speed, sure. If you want to comp the speed, absolutely. So this could be a 50-plus steal guy in the major leagues, like legit. But there's a better bat here, better contact skills, a bit more opinion. It doesn't have big power, but he has at least some element of power to his game, or maybe he's like a 10, 12 homer guy, but... Yeah, a lot to like here with Victor Scott and someone Welsh that we probably could see at some point this year.
Yeah, I'm a little bit dicey about when we see and how we see, because that place is so crowded. Obviously, right. Like they're doing the Tommy Edman in center field thing. And if for some reason defensively that didn't work and they wanted to just move and they wanted to get a high end defensive guy, like Victor Scott's the guy. Like I out here in the AFL, he's one of the most impressive interviews I've ever had. And I've had a decent amount, but you want to talk about just like impressive human being of understanding of who they are, where they want to be, their work and stuff. It's Victor Scott, like top three of any of those guys. I was thoroughly impressed listening to him, not just talk about the work that goes into stealing bases, the competitive nature, but also like him wanting to be a better hitter. And he went to I don't remember if it was like a Tread or it was someone like that this offseason. He's been working on trying to break down analytically his swing, how he can tap into it. If you add in the AFL, he had double digit homers as well. So it wasn't just 100 plus. That was because I told him, I was like, you have like 5 stolen bases when I interviewed. And he smiled about that when he thought about that process. So he's a great guy to bet on. I don't think the cost has hit a fever pitch. It's definitely way more than it would have been if you would have tried to buy him like 2 or 3 months ago. But I would, because defensively, he is going to never have to leave center field. It's like the Mason Wynn thing. Mason Wynn's arm and defense, he's so good, you can't not have him at short. The difference is Victor Scott is an elite base stealer and has a legit shot at putting in double digits. So if you can just get to, I don't think, and I don't know if CJ Abrams' power continues, but if it went down to 12 and he still stole 45 bases, we could all make proper excuses. Look at Nico Hoerner. Everyone loves him. And I don't think the power is real whatsoever. No. I legit think that he can be a center field Nico Hoerner with more stolen base upside. Yep. And that alone, Nico's going around the 60s in NFBC drafts. I think he can be a top 50 fantasy player, even if the power doesn't become above average. But that's how much I believe in Victor Scott. So, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah. Clegg, how about you?
Yeah, I don't have much to add. I think Scott's much better. Esteban Ruiz, we've said that a good bit. The power, the torque that he gets in his lower half and the swing, like he's not going to be a huge power source, but 10 home runs is certainly attainable. He's a gold glove caliber center fielder. So he's got a lock when he ultimately gets there. Like he's going to play every day. He's going to run wild. I think that he's actually a really good fantasy value. And you mentioned with Hoerner, which is interesting, like how high he's going. Hoerner stole 40 bases last year, hit what, 9 or 10 home runs. So if Scott can do and steal more than that, then no telling how high he goes. But yeah, I like the profile a lot here.
Yeah, and I think when we were in the outfield, and I think, Clegg, you were doing like a live thing and asking us like whoever most impressive hitter we've seen. And I think I'm pretty sure I said Scott because it's because the quality of his at bats. Like obviously we knew the speed was there, but just every at bat was a good, even if it was an out, it was a quality at bat. He wasn't getting fooled. He was driving the ball. Like he can get behind a pitch. And yeah, it's not going to be a lot of over defense power, probably more so in doubles and triples. But yeah, even if he just gets 10, 12 home runs, like he could be like Carl Crawford light. And Carl Crawford was an earlier on fantasy asset for a handful of years before his body broke down. So, yeah, 10, 50 plus with a solid average and decent OBP. Absolutely. And so I underranked him for a long time, but not anymore. Like he's a top 50 fantasy prospect, no doubt in my mind right now. But let's keep it right there in the NL Central for this next guy. Go over to Blake Dunn of the Cincinnati Reds, who had a very big year. In his own right, he was one of the was it two or three guys to go 20-50 this year. It was him, Class A, and maybe another. I can't remember. But overall, in 124 games between high A and double A, 312, 425, 522 slash, 23 bombs, 54 steals. Only caught 7 times as well. Yeah, but some people are getting way in on Dunn. Others are a little more hesitant, a little bit older. But where are you at on Blake Dunn? Very intriguing prospect, to say the least. How high do you go on him, and what do you expect? Are you buying into some of the tools that we saw from him this past year?
He's not a top 100 guy for me. If I were just ranking proximity, yeah, probably. But this is an instance where maybe this is going to be crutchy, but this is a 24-year-old guy who was dominating at A ball, high A, and then went to double A. And I know levels are tearing off a little bit, and it's not quite what it was like 5 years ago when you would look at a player and they would. Dominic Keegan was a great example. Like Dominic Keegan, they kept in like, he was like A ball for way too long. And then they moved him to high A and we're like, what are we doing? Let's get him out of here. So the levels, I think, they've proverbially leveled off a little bit. But I don't also want to like look at a guy who put up video game numbers, 23 homers, 54 stolen bases, and didn't get above double A. I don't want to excuse that. But at the same time, you can go and take a look and you can go, okay, this is over 60 stolen base attempts. He was over, I think it was 45 extra base hits between triples, doubles, but that's not a big doubles number overall. And the strikeouts were there while he was also walking into 400 OBP, but there was still some strikeout stuff in there. I think this is I just had the example, but this is a good guy to dream on. Hey, if he were given an opportunity in one of the most hitter friendly environments, if he were given that spot, he has the ability to be a 2020 guy. Is he going to tap into that? I personally don't think so. And is he going to get the opportunity with the Reds? I don't think so. That's the other thing. I think he could be in Michael Bush land for a little bit. Like where, how is that going to materialize? I don't 100% know. So maybe I'm being negative because I haven't had crazy in-person looks. Maybe I'm being negative because he was old at levels, way older at levels. And maybe I'm being negative because this was a dramatically different year. He had 5 career homers prior to this season. And he had literally half the stolen bases in 2 seasons in his career prior to this as well. So this is a big major breakout campaign that I'm not willing to take the sample size and be like, oh yeah, top 25 outfielder, top 100 prospect. That's just me though. And maybe I'm missing something that I need to look into more. And I will probably get plenty of looks at him, luckily, in spring training, because I will imagine he's going to get opportunity. And maybe I'll report back and be like, you know what? I'm a big dummy and I was completely wrong. And it didn't matter that he was 24 at A ball, but I do think that kind of matters.
Yeah, it definitely does to a degree for sure. I think I'm a little more in on him. Like, I'm not going crazy in my ranking, though. I think I do have him the highest of the three of us. But I just think that if he does get that shot, like you were mentioning, Welsh, is the power big? No. But could he be 15 home runs in Great American Ballpark? Sure. I think that's definitely a possibility. Oh, yeah. Could he be 20 plus steals? Sure. And the contact skills, you know, we're solid. I think they're like 75, 76%. Yeah, that'll play. And obviously you get the BABIP boost there. So I think my ranking of is assuming he's going to get that shot, but you could be very right on that, Welsh. And
yeah, know, like barring injury, where is that shot though? Like yeah, right now their crowded outfield is Steer, Friedel, and Will Benson with Christian Encarnacion Strand and Jake Fraley.
Yep.
In the wings. Plus, by the way, they've got a bevy of these like young prospects that are also coming. And Carlos Jorge is one of those guys that's going to move to the outfield. So it's, to me, there's like a small window where you can do it with the Reds. I wouldn't be shocked if he was flipped in a trade at some point here to give him an opportunity, which would be great. And that's why I comped it to kind of Michael Bush. There might be if he does it again, we're all going to be screaming like free Blake Dunn. It is hard to imagine where it's going to happen with the Reds, right. But you know what? Maybe the Reds might be a trade away getting a pitcher or something like that. Yep. And then all of a sudden Steer is traded to the Guardians for Shane Bieber. And then now there might be an open spot for Dunn to take over.
Or he's packaged with India to go and get like a Dylan Cease or something like that.
Yeah.
A lot of things have happened, but yeah, right now it's a bit crowded everywhere. It's in that Cincinnati roster, but Clegg, what are your thoughts on Blake Dunn here?
I think he's fine. I don't know. I don't fully buy it. You look, he ran a 413 BABIP in AA this year, which boosted the stat line significantly. And he did make had a 77% contact rate, which is solid. It's like average contact. I think the EVs were about average as well. So I don't fully buy the power. I think he's like a 15 home run bat. And the speed, I'm banking on him being like a 20, 25 stolen base guy. But it's all opportunity cost, and there's no opportunity for Dunn. Kind of in the Welsh camp there, I think Dunn's a fine prospect, but I'm not sure Dunn's everyday player. And so that's my concern with the profile, is while he's shown some flashes this year, I don't know where he fits in or gets his shot. And ultimately, I just don't think he's going to play every day. So I'm just a little bit lower on him.
Actually, now that I think about it more, like that trade with the White Sox hypothetically could be a really good India, because obviously slot right in there with the White Sox. A lot more chances for Dunn to maybe break in with the White Sox than they would be with the Reds.
It would take so much more based off of they've been asking for the world. They, if you remember, the trade rumor out there was they asked for Rhett Lauder, I think, and Ty Floyd. So they, and then, and
plus
so,
two more. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So like the Reds would have to, like, I could see it, but it ain't going to be for like India and Dunn isn't getting.
Oh, no. Yeah. I wasn't saying just those two.
But oh, okay. Like maybe India, Lauder, and Dunn. Maybe the White Sox bend a little bit or something like that. And yeah, it's just opportunity. There's a couple of those guys. I would love for Blake Dunn to give an opportunity because that's one of those free squares you get. But I think sometimes you have to treat free squares like free squares, not like a lottery ticket.
Yeah, no, that's valid. All right, let's round up the show here by picking one guy outside of our top 25 outfield prospects right now that we think could jump into our top 10 outfield prospects by the end of this upcoming season. Welsh, who's that guy for you?
Oh, man, there's a bunch. I wanted to say Zach Veen because I think everybody's given up on Zach Veen. I didn't love the hard hit numbers he had, but prior to the injury, like he was really trying to loft the ball in spring training, but that wrist injury just, I wonder if that zapped a lot of the stuff. I wanted to say him. I got a couple guys that you guys have hired that I could have gone to. Chase Davis was another one that was floating out to me if he can get right this season. I'm going to throw this at you guys. Dylan Head with the Padres.
Yeah.
Dylan Head is one of those guys. And I think it's a Victor Scott type of thing, because this is an elite stolen base guy. He hit 267 this past year, spent a lot. I got to see him a couple times. He spent most of his time, or not actually, I guess it was split, but he spent a decent amount at rookie ball where he hit 294, moved up into A ball, which I thought was a nice aggressive assignment. And this is the type of guy that can steal 40, 50 bases. And if the power does develop, like we're all hoping, because he got bigger, he got quite a bit bigger. And he was actually at the Dream Series just the other day, which he looked like he might've gained another inch or two as well. If you get 15 homer power in here with the 40 or 50 stolen bases, we're going to be talking about Dylan Head this time next year as like a top 10, top 15 outfielder. So since we're going outside the top 25, that was probably the most prominent one that jumped to mind.
Yeah, no, that's a great one, too. And a guy I did look at a little bit there, too. Love the upside. Love that landing spot with San Diego. So, yeah, definitely a lot of fun in that profile with Dylan Head, for sure. Clegg, who's your guy?
I was torn on a couple. I wanted to go a little deeper and find somebody. So, I'm going with Robert Klaas of the Rockies.
Oh, I like that.
He has some really solid skill set. He was in the DSL last year. And so, you don't want to put a lot of stock into just the stat line. But he did mash / 325, 423, 561, 7 home runs. He makes really strong contact. I mean, a zone contact rate north of 83%. His ninth percentile exit velocity was already above 107. He maxed out at 114. Like, the dude absolutely rakes. And I think that he's just going to be a guy that vaults up ranking significantly once he gets stateside and people get looks at him like, wow, this kid can play. And so while we want to be a little bit careful with a 17-year-old in the DSL, there's a good hitter in the DSL should dominate. But we'll see what he's made of, and I'm just wondering, I think he's going to make a big jump this year.
Yeah, no, that's a great pick there. I like Klaas a lot. And you know, again, another fantasy-friendly profile there. I'm torn between two Dodgers here, different profiles. You could go Josue De Paula or another guy I like a lot, Eduardo Quintero. He's got, I'll talk about here, he was very good down in the DSL, hit 359, 472, 618, 5 home runs. He's a guy that has a really good profile all around. The power's still developing. You'll see where that ends up long term. But I think there could be above average power in the profile. He's shown a good feel to hit, great approach so far. Look at that super high OBP. He had more walks than strikeouts as well. And you know, he's a good athlete too. And he's a guy that doesn't get a lot. I have him top 100 right now. I don't think you'll see that on very many other rankings, at least not yet. I think that could change this upcoming year, because everything I've heard about him is really positive. He'll come stateside this year, and if he comes stateside and you know continues to showcase a good all-around offensive skill set, you know, especially with the Dodgers tag, great and a great org to be in, I think you'll really see him start to really shoot up rankings this upcoming year. So I guess I'll go Quintero, but also De Paula as well. You can't go wrong picking anybody in the Dodgers org, that's for sure. But that wraps us up. Welsh, always a pleasure. Good friend of the pod, number one guest, I think, on this podcast. But give you the floor here and promote all the good stuff you got going on.
Oh, life's a little bit easier. I don't have like five different places that I'll dominate. Just follow my Twitter. Is it the Welsh? That's the best thing you can do. I will say, obviously, inthisleague.com is still the Patreon, which still rolls on. The prospect, the big update, adding the J15s, Dynasty, all that stuff, that's going to be happening sometime this week, as well as like my redraft. So all of my prospect updates, P180Ps and stuff, live on the Patreon. So if that is your world, you pick a couple people that you love, you pick a little Cross, pick a little Clegg on the Substack, pick a little Welsh, sign up for those, you get everything you need. Go to inthisleague.com. And then, as you mentioned, I'm full bore with Fantasy Pros now. They brought me on full time, which is awesome. Doing Dynasty content. I released a public prospect rank, which I've only done once other time with The Athletic. So you're going to get Dynasty stuff as well. And I am back on the podcast with Leading Off. So if people want to check those out on YouTube and on any podcast app, just type in Leading Off. And yeah, just anything I do, click and like it and tell Fantasy Pros how much you love it, just so we can justify your boy. But is it the Welsh on the Twitter? It's the best thing to do.
Absolutely. Always great stuff from Welsh. Follow him on Twitter. Follow Clegg at RotoClegg. Me at AirCross04. Y'all know where our stuff lies. TheDynastyDugout.com, ToolshedFantasy.com. Both of us writing for RotoBaller now as well. So go check out that stuff too. And we'll be back later on in the week with our Dynasty Outfield Rankings episode. But until then, everyone take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.